thanks for joining. And if you want to introduce yourself a bit, just who you are, where you're from, that'd be awesome.
So my name is Amanda Bankert. I'm originally from Alexandria, Virginia, just outside of DC. I am the owner of Bone Shaker here in Paris. We are a donut shop. We're actually the first donut shop in France. And I've been here now on and off since 2001 with an 8.5 year detour in Dublin, Ireland. So I came here originally as an art history student, then came back as a Cordon Bleu student, got my degree from the Cordon Bleu, moved to Ireland, worked as a pastry chef, moved back here, opened a donut shop.
Casual.
Yeah.
So and scene.
Yeah. Exactly.
When you say you're the first in France, does that mean that there are other donut shops in France now?
There are now. So the funny thing is, so we opened in 2015. Mm. And at that time, the reason we actually opened was because I wanted to eat donuts and there were none here. So I knew I'd sort of moved here permanently. I'd done predominantly French pastry when I lived in Dublin, because obviously if you're French trained and you go anywhere, that's really what people are looking for, especially in high-end restaurants. So that's what I did. But then when I moved back to Paris, I was like, I'm not going to do French pastry because there's already a number of people excelling at that here. And I want to do something kind of different and fun and a little more casual as well. But that still sort of takes into quality and seasonality and everything takes that sort of mentality, but puts it into a product that's kind of accessible, fun, casual. And so when we were trying to figure out, you know, what we were going to do, I sort of realized that, you know, through donut cravings that there were no donuts here. You know, you have beignets, but it's different, you know, like a beignet is really old school, like homemade American donut. So that was sort of like the eureka moment. We were the first one. And in fact, we were told at the beginning as well that we would be like a massive failure because donuts were not only did they not exist here, but they would not work here. So
there's no market for it.
Right. Yeah.
Because the French are fairly particular about
exactly
what they put in their bodies.
Yeah. And I think that I've come to learn, because we actually got over that pretty quickly. It actually didn't end up being like a major stumbling block for us. But I think initially it's actually that donuts were seen as such an industrial food. So the idea, and even now we still get, if new clients are coming, like one of the first things they'll ask are like, you know, are they industrial or are they made here? So I think as soon as we're explaining to people that actually it's a beignet, more or less, you know, like, and that, you know, we have people, you know, at the beginning it was just me, but that are there at the crack of dawn, actually like making dough and rolling it out and making all the glazes and fill, you know, once you put it in kind of that like boulangerie or pâtisserie, frame where you're like, no, we're here in the bakery making everything from scratch and they're fried. So like, yes, they're fried. But other than that, it's all, you know, it's nothing different that you're getting at your local bakery. People then got on board. They're into it.
I can't wait to like explore that realm, especially because I Holy Belly. You have to know Holy Belly.
Yeah.
They did something very similar in terms of entering a market where you don't think you're going to succeed because it's so different from.
Right. Yeah.
Can't wait to explore that. We're going to bring it back a little bit to DC.
Yep.
What did your parents do that had you in Alexandria? Because that's usually a very specific market.
Not really. My parents both went to college in DC and just stayed.
Mm, okay.
So like that was why, you know, I think that was why we were there. My dad went to Georgetown and my mom went to a college called Dunbarton, which doesn't exist anymore. But like an all girls Catholic school. I think if I remember correctly, but yeah, so basically they met in college in DC and just stayed, you know, that was their, they stayed there to raise their families basically.
Okay.
We only have one family.
That's a good correction.
Yeah.
That's fair. And so you born, raised DC and then where did you went to school in New York, you said?
I did. I went to Sarah Lawrence for college. Yeah. Which not a lot of people, I think it's a kind of a niche sort of type of person who's heard about that. It's like a very liberal arts college, essentially. It's super small, really creative. I went there initially because I wanted to be a poet, so I went to study poetry. And then I changed to art history sort of halfway through, but it's a cool place.
And while you were there, you were like, Paris. I mean, yeah. Art history.
Well, exactly. It's because I was studying. So it kind of went hand in hand. I had studied French since high school. So I'd taken French in school. So I think always sort of had this interest, you know, not this like burning desire for France, but I think, you know, I'd always had this kind of interest in Paris and in France. Then when I was studying art, you know, that's a kind of no brainer. If you're going to do a year abroad, plus with my French studies, it just was like, I'm obviously going to go to Paris. I took French in college as well. So I didn't like major in it or anything, but I was taking French classes in college as well. And yeah, so that was then why it was really just like, I, you know, it would have been kind of weird for me to go anywhere else really, seeing as what my background was.
Did you think when you went to Paris, you said it was for a year?
Yeah, it was supposed to actually only be for my second semester. So I arrived in January 2001. The semester ended in May, I guess, or April, whenever they ended, or May, I guess. And I was like, I'm not going home yet. So I kind of eked it out until August. Like, I think I, you know, stayed until the very last minute, and then went back to the States in August, literally like did my senior year of college, and then like jumped on a plane. Within a week, I was back in Paris.
Did you expect to love it that much?
No. But I knew very quickly that I did. So I think I went into it, like, I mean, hoping I would like it. Obviously, I thought I was excited to go. I thought it was going to be cool. I certainly didn't think that I would end up then moving there for the rest of my life. You know, like, I think that just wasn't, I said, that was a really pleasant surprise. It was really cool. Because it was the first place I sort of expected to feel that way about New York. When I got to New York, I think I'd spent my whole adolescence kind of envisioning New York as this, like, you know, heavenly place that I was going to get to and finally sort of feel like I'd found where I belonged. And I liked New York, but I didn't have that, like, I didn't love it the way I thought I would. And then I did get that when I came to Paris. So, like, very, very quickly, I knew once, after I moved here, that I was going to do everything I could to live here, which is cool.
I mean, that is what's really interesting, is that you did live in three big cities, three really worldly cities. And yet you still found within a day of arriving that Paris was it.
Yeah. It just felt like home. Yeah.
That's crazy. Did the people that you were with on that abroad, was it alone or were you with a group of students?
I was with a group of students through an eclectic mix of different universities. So we went through something that I don't even know if it exists anymore. It was through a program called Wells College for the Arts. So it was all kind of like creatively minded, like all the kids that were, we lived in City Universitaire on the outskirts. So we were in kind of like this big student housing block, basically, in the outskirts, in the American building. And then like all the kids were there, who were there, you know, people were there studying dance, people were there studying art, studying sculpture, you know, so it was all kind of like an artistically, I don't know, minded sort of group, because that's what the program was for. But nobody, I think I knew there was two other kids from Sarah Lawrence, but that I hadn't actually known from school. We got to know each other when we were here on the program. Mm,
okay. How did you, so, cause you just mentioned that you then quickly finished your senior year, moved back to Paris.
Yeah.
But you moved back for Cordon Bleu. Like you'd.
Yeah.
That's very different from art history.
It is and it isn't. So I'd actually worked in restaurants since I was 15. So I started working when I was 15 as a hostess in a restaurant in DC, worked there throughout high school, waitressed then all throughout college as well. So I was really familiar with restaurants, loved restaurant life, you know, loved the vibe, loved just that whole kind of like lifestyle. And yeah, and it was something that I can done continuously throughout high school and then in college as well. And so when I was trying to figure out how to get back to Paris, I was a very avid like home cook/baker. And I did not want to go immediately to grad school for art history. I knew that. So I decided instead to try, because pastry, what I liked about pastry and what I still like about pastry, and I say this a lot, but it's completely unnecessary. Like, it literally is there just to be beautiful and just to give pleasure, which is not dissimilar to art in a way, kind of, if you think of it that way. Like, it's just this like visually engrossing thing that kind of like draws you in, and then you get just like immense pleasure out of it. Like, there's no, you don't eat dessert for sustenance, you know, you literally eat it just to make you happy. And so I found that very appealing.
Wow. That, I've never heard that. And I love that. I'm not the best art person. All my friends know never to take me to museum because I'm just terrible at it.
Right.
Because I view it as unnecessary.
Right. Well, there you go. See?
But like, viewing a pastry as unnecessary seems blasphemous to me because it seems very necessary.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how you, you know, it depends on how you look at it. It's, you know, it's just a bit of a bit of indulgence, you know, which I think we all need. So.
Yes. Which is, that actually makes me feel better about art. I have a friend who's an art major and she's like, how? Why?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's so cool. And how long was the program with Cordon Bleu?
About a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, I'm still going to live in Paris for the rest of my life. And yet you ended up in Dublin.
Yeah, I knew I'd figure it out. Like, for me, I was like, I'm there for a year. It gives me a year to like figure out, you know, how to stay. And then, yeah. And then I randomly ended up in Ireland, which was not, you know, part of the initial plan, but, you know, life is more interesting that way anyways. So, so slight detour to Dublin for almost all of my 20s.
Detour.
And then
casual.
Yeah, exactly. But it ended up working out really well because while I was living there, because I lived there for so long, I was actually able to apply for Irish citizenship, which I did, which then meant that I could move back to Paris with no difficulty because now I have European citizenship as well. So it ended up being very necessary because otherwise, you know, it may have been more complicated for me to stay in Paris long-term. I mean, again, all doable, like, think it's always doable, but just with that Irish passport, sorry, that was my phone that beeped there. I apologize. With that Irish passport, it means that now I can live and work in Europe, you know, forever. So,
which is incredible, especially because as residents, you can only work and live in one country.
Right.
When you become a citizen, you have access to the whole EU.
Right. Exactly.
And for most of the time, England as
right,
well.
Exactly. It used to be. Exactly.
Which is why you're probably like, I'm so glad it was Ireland that I ended up in and not England.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I mean, my, you know, I joke with my husband about this. My family is all Irish American. So,
Okay.
So I was thrilled when I went to live in Ireland. So, you know.
How is that? Because that's such an interesting, I talk about this all the time with people who identify as Irish American.
Yes.
I spent 3 months in Ireland and they always talk to me about, they're like, why do Americans say that? It's so confusing.
I think that there's a difference between being Irish American and there's a difference in Irish. And I just think that because of American culture, we don't see it that way. And so, you know, because there's such a culture, well, the culture in America is to, you know, hold on to your heritage, especially if you come from a community that tends to, you know, stay a little bit insular. So if you, you know, come from, let's say, like an Italian American community where, like, you know, everybody kind of marries other Italian Americans, you know, because you have like pockets where it stays quite kind of, you know, like these groups. So I think when that culture is then, you know, and it's then like passed on generation to generation, and you're actually told like you're Irish. And I think it obviously initially started with the immigrants sort of holding on to their culture. But then, you know, you're like 100 years down the line or 150 years down the line, but it still has stayed. So you still get this, like, you get it like kind of beat into you, like where you're from, you know, and then it doesn't translate very well though, when you go to that country, because they're like, what are you talking about? Like you're, because I think obviously for somebody then who's born and raised like in Ireland, to hear somebody who's never set foot in the country. And not only that, but like the last relative that lived in that country was like four generations ago. It's just a little bit of a, but I think it's just a cultural difference. Like I think, you know, so for me, it's just cultural. I think sometimes the Irish need to like lighten up a little bit about it, and the Americans need to be a little less hardcore about it. And, and then, you know, there's like a happy medium in there somewhere.
Yeah. In the middle.
Yeah. But it really is just like semantics. It's just like cultural differences. I don't think, you know, and I think, and it, you know, Americans, I think they're just really excited to be able to like, you know, talk about how, you know, like it's not, it's come, it's, it comes from a place of excitement and pride. So I think it's kind of mean to then like make fun of them for it, but also having lived in Ireland for 10 years, like I totally get it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. And I do think you're right. Like a lot of it stems from the migrant experience initially, but now it's, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that there's a lot of countries that have ingrained cultures in them. And a lot of Americans don't experience that because it's so multicultural, or it originally stemmed from multicultural migrants.
Yeah.
That they're just trying to grasp onto anything.
Yeah.
And it happens to be a lot of Irish.
It does. Yeah. I know. Yeah. But you know, as I said, I try and, you know, be understanding of, like, as I said, cause I don't think it's ever coming from a place of, anything but excitement and enthusiasm. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know? I'm just going to make sure that we're, this is right.
But, you know, as I said, I totally get it. Like,
yeah.
You know, like some like random person at the bar, like screaming in your face, like, I'm Irish. And, you know, you know, I get it.
Well, I had one of my close friends in Paris. She's Irish, and we have this conversation a lot because she did spend time in America. So it's also really awesome because I feel like sometimes Americans who are abroad have this weird feeling of this weird identity feeling, because you don't necessarily feel like you have culture,
right?
Because it's one, American culture is very distributed, so everyone kind of knows it.
Yeah.
And two, we also don't have a long history.
Right.
And so I think a lot of Americans experience that. And she would always say, like, you guys have a lot of culture that you should feel proud of. And I'd never really had anyone tell me that whenever I was traveling. And so I was like, oh, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
But she also said that a lot of people would go up to her in a bar and pretend to be Irish before even knowing she was Irish. And they'd be like, anytime they're drunk, they'd just bring up this Irish accent and be like, I'm from Ireland, just to like pick someone up. And she was like, weirdest thing to me ever. I was like, what the heck are you talking about?
Yeah.
But I've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm curious now, if you went back to the States for some time and you started talking with your semi-Irish accent, if people would be like, hello.
Yeah, maybe. I know. Who knows? I said, the funny thing is Americans don't think I sound totally American. Americans think I sound a little bit Irish. Irish people think I sound totally American. You know, so, I mean, I get a lot, like if I'm home in the States and I'm meeting people, I do get a lot of like, you know, people will kind of quizzically be like, where are you from? You know, because I think that, but I, you know, I sounded way more Irish when I had been living there at the end of the 8 years. Like I see like videos of myself from back then and I'm like, who is this person? She does not sound like me. So I think it's become a lot more Americanized in the, like, you know, now I've been away for again 10 years again. So I could 10 years there and I've been 10 years back here. And I think the American sort of twang has come out a lot more in these last 10 years than it used to be when I'd been in Dublin for the.
Do you think it's because you interact with more Americans in Paris than you had before?
Yeah, I guess. It's funny because it's weird. As I said, my husband's Irish. So at home, you know, that's like the English that I'm hearing is obviously with a bit of an Irish twinge to it. But I work with Americans at the donut shop. There's quite a few Americans there. I don't know. I just think maybe not having it, not having like being surrounded by Irish people all the time. I think the reason I developed more of sort of that twinge is because literally all I was hearing was like very strong Dublin accents all the time. And so just over the course of, you know, almost, you know, 9 years or whatever it was, I think that it changed my speech patterns more. And then now that I'm away from that, so that I'm, you know, it's not just constantly, you know, because obviously when you're living there, it's everybody you're talking to, it's the TV, it's the radio, you know, it's all the language I was hearing was kind of with that with those sort of intonations. Because I don't know if my accent has ever, I mean, I know that I pronounce certain words, like the word Ireland, I'm told that I say it in quite an Irish way, but I think otherwise it's mainly my vocabulary that, so I'll use certain words that tend to be more, you know, not as American. And I think it's inflection and intonation. So I put emphasis on certain words in a sentence that are more sort of Irish sounding than American, if that makes sense. But I think my actual tone is probably, to the Irish person's ear, still very nasally and American.
Still very American.
Yeah. Yeah.
How was, because you lived in Paris with Cordon Bleu. Mm-hmm. And so, especially if you had fallen in love with kind of Paris, you mm-hmm. probably started attempting to adapt to the culture of France. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you had to move, you didn't have to, but you moved to Dublin. Mm-hmm. And what was that transition like between learning, going from American to French culture, and then having to transition fairly quickly to Irish culture?
Yeah, it was a huge culture shock. And the funny thing is, in a way, France was less of a huge culture shock because I knew that it was going to be really different, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I was aware that France was going to be radically different to what my life in the States was like. Mm-hmm. And I think I had no notions whatsoever as to what Irish life was going to be like. So in a weird way, that was actually a more difficult transition for me to make. Ireland was not at all what I expected it. Well, I don't know what I expected it to be, but I was quite lost there at the beginning, actually, to be quite honest. And I think it just was because I had no way to really prepare myself. And like the Irish people that I knew here in France at the time, you know, were people that were like traveling and working in bars. So it's not always the best indication of what like the nation's culture as a whole is like. And so otherwise, a lot of my perception about what Ireland was like had been from my American upbringing in an Irish American family, which, you know, as we talked about earlier, is actually not very accurate.
Wow. Yeah.
That actual, you know, that country is going to be like. So it was a huge adjustment for me arriving in Dublin, and I was really unprepared for it. And I was actually quite unhappy for a while when I arrived there because of that. But then, you know, time passed and I eventually made a bunch of really, really good friends and it ended up being really good, but it definitely, I had a really rocky start there, to be like perfectly honest. And it was, largely due to the fact that I just was completely caught off guard as to what living in Ireland would actually be like, you know.
Do you remember the most shocking thing about it?
That's a weird question. Or not, yeah, but I mean, that's a weird, it makes me, it's not a weird question.
Oh, I love that. That's so weird.
No, I meant that's a good fair question, I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think, okay. No, like it's a question that I would like to answer, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like but I think I'd have to think about it and prepare it properly. Mm-hmm. I think Ireland was a lot more closed than I expected it to be, I suppose would be a way that I could put that out. People were very friendly, but the community seemed very closed. So I found it hard to infiltrate sort of and like make friends. So I had lots of passing, pleasant exchanges with people, but it took me a long time to sort of make friends. And I think I expected people to be more immediately sort of welcoming, but they weren't unwelcoming. Like that's why I said I'd have to like have time to prepare it properly, so it doesn't sound like I'm complaining or you know, tr- trash talking, because it wasn't like that. Like, it wasn't, people weren't unfriendly, but I was very, very lonely at the same time, you know? So, yeah.
I think that's an experience that a lot of migrants have.
Yeah.
And it's almost never indicative of the culture.
Right.
It's usually just indicative of the migrant experience.
Right.
And so I, like, having been a migrant myself, like, I get it. But if someone's never actually migrated to a foreign country, it'd be like, that's, I can see where it's like, that's rude, but it's really not. It's like just commenting on what it's like to be a foreigner in a foreign country.
Yeah. And it's a different, the funny thing is though, when I came to France, I didn't have, I think what shocked me so much though, is that I didn't have that transition coming to France. But I think the difference is, for me personally, is that the group that I kind of fell in with in France was mainly comprised around sort of like Irish bars at the time. But so it was groups of young people. And as I mentioned earlier, who were predominantly traveling. So you kind of had this very, you had like already these spaces of like-minded sort of like creative traveling young people. So actually I kind of arrived in Paris and like immediately made friends, you know, and I got lucky to find these groups of people very quickly, but I did. And so, you know, I sort of arrived and like made friends really quickly with this group of like-minded people. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Ireland, I didn't have that. And so I think that that's what the biggest change was for me. And I think in some ways as well, Paris is such a transitional city for a lot of people that, whereas Dublin people, you know, people tend to leave Dublin, you know, because obviously the Irish, they go and they live elsewhere. But you know, it's only recently that people are sort of coming back to live in Ireland, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have the same culture of kind of like, you know, it also, I had a brand new baby. So, you know.
It's a very different experience. You were also meeting.
I was like drinking in bars.
Yeah.
In the morning, you know, like. So.
You were, but it's also like really fascinating because in Paris, you were meeting other migrants.
Right. Exactly.
So it wasn't French people.
No, not at all. Mm-mm.
And so I think it's this crazy in between of you're trying to integrate into society, but at one point you stop trying as hard because sometimes you just need to survive.
Yeah.
And so just meeting people, even if they're migrants, is essential. And that's probably what happened in Paris. But then you move to Ireland, you expect, because it's the same language, because you have a little bit more of an experience with the culture probably.
Yeah.
And you have a kid, you kind of have to ingrain in the culture differently. And you were probably trying to make like really local friends.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's exactly it. Cause I think when I was here initially, again, when I was like 20 or whatever, when I first moved here, I was so excited to be in Paris. But yeah, my group of friends, there were some French people in that group, but it was literally, as you said, it's migrants from all of, I mean, I had Danish friends, Chinese friends, you know, friends from New Zealand, you know, like literally people from all over the world, who were kind of brought together by, you know, just like, you know, I had a lot of friends who were in the arts, so it was like painters and stuff like that. And, you know, but I was less focused on sort of integrating. I didn't shun, you know, French society either. I was very keen to, you know, I loved being in France, but I think I didn't think too much about it. I didn't have to. I had the good fortune, to sort of just fall in with this group of eclectic people from all over.
Do you think, because I hear a lot of Europe, like the difference between a lot of European countries and America. Mm. And I think now that I realize it, I think it might be predominantly English speaking countries and not purely America. But the difference between Europe and the States is the way you describe Europeans is that they're what, coconuts? Hard on the outside. And like once you get to know them,
right.
They're like friends for life as opposed to Americans. And I'm guessing now the Irish culture, what, peaches, where it's pretty soft and like you have really friendly interactions with people quite a bit.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, are we friends? And then it's really hard to get to know them.
Right.
Which makes it really hard, especially for a foreigner to be like, aren't we friends? And you're like, we're friendly.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, I think for me, as I said, obviously having a brand new baby when I moved, there was a massive aspect as well to my loneliness and lack of integration, because I didn't know anybody, and then I had a newborn. So anybody who's had a new baby can tell you that's a really isolating experience anyways, or can be. So, the cards just weren't stacked in my favor initially. But
that's just, yeah. And then it just takes time.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it's kind of one of those, like, all's well that ends well type of thing. Like, it was fine, but to answer your initial question, like, no, I was in no way prepared for living in Ireland. It took me by surprise.
Mm. And then you moved back to Paris.
Yes.
How long was it between moving back and you started Bone Shakers?
3 years.
3 years. Yeah. What were you doing in between the three?
I was working as a pastry chef at a restaurant here in Leal. I actually had a really hard time getting a job when I first came back, which surprised me, because I thought that since I trained here initially and then had worked continuously in, like, good places in Dublin, that I thought I'd be able just to, cause pastry chefs or chefs in general, like, we are quite kind of like transient people. Like, it's normal to sort of move to different countries. Like, it feels like the type of work that you can always get, more or less. And I was not having any doors open to me when I came back, which was frustrating at first. And I've learned since then that that's actually kind of normal as well, because people often, or employers, I think, being aware of that, are sort of hesitant sometimes to take non-French people on in positions because they think you're not going to be here for a long time. But obviously I didn't know that at the time. So I spent a few months initially sort of, passing out my resume, waiting to get a job. And then I eventually took a job at a place called Comptoir de la Gastronomie, which is a restaurant in Leal. super traditional. So it's like they make their own foie gras, they have like an épicerie on one side. So they're selling like wine and charcuterie and caviar. And I think the shop itself, it's gorgeous. The shop itself, I think, has been there since like the early to mid 1800s. And it's really beautiful. It's all like dark wood and velvet and just like kind of almost like a caricature of Paris, but it's real, but so that was fabulous. No, but that was fabulous because it was so Parisian, or like so French, and I went in there and I worked as the pastry chef there. And that was great for me though, because I had just come off, as I said, like a really long time in Ireland. I hadn't spoken very much French, obviously, in those 10 years. And then I was thrown into this like crazily French environment, where none of, a few of my colleagues spoke English, but nobody spoke English to me. So I was forced to use French for, 10 to 12 hours a day exclusively. And they kind of just let me struggle through it. And like, but it was really good because it actually got my language back up to scratch. My French still isn't amazing, but it's, fine. They got it up, they got it up to like a very good conversational level within a few months, because I was just forced to only speak it all the time.
And were they patient with you as you were struggling?
Yeah. I mean, like, everybody was pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, like, okay. The good thing is I did speak some French. So again, it's not like I was coming from zero. I just think I had like terrible grammar, had like forgotten a lot of the vocabulary. And so I think, I don't think it was the same as me coming in and being at zero, I think it was just like speaking to somebody who probably sounded really stupid a lot of the time, I spoke like a toddler or something. But no, they were really nice. They were actually really, really nice, in that regard, and very encouraging, and, encouraging in the sense that they just like relentlessly continued to speak French.
Yeah.
but that worked. And then, and it was really good as well, like culturally, because I think, again, probably previously, because I hadn't hung out with like that many French people. And I was then like immersed in this, just like, yeah, like almost like a caricature, of French culture, like it was great, but, everybody's eating super, super French food. We would stop every day at like 4 PM for a family meal. Everybody's, smoking 10 million cigarettes but it was just like, and the restaurant is run by two sisters, and they're like effortlessly like glamorous and beautiful and amazing and just, very chic. And And it was fun. It was fun. It was just a really, it was a whole other world for me. And I'm really grateful for the time that I had there.
That's incredible. And then you started craving donuts in the midst of that.
Yeah, well, I knew always, my goal was always to come back and open something of my own here. So I knew that I wanted to open my own pastry shop. Mm. That had been my dream since college. So like when I went to the Cordon Bleu, I knew already that was, you know, that was what I wanted to do. So then I just needed to figure out what exactly, how that was going to look, you know, as opposed to, you know, I needed to figure out, I thought a lot about doing like a tea room or, you know, like something like that. And then, so the donuts was unexpected, but fit ended up being perfect. So
what, okay. So you decided to open a donut shop and you were initially told you were going to fail.
Yeah.
How was it? I know finding, you know, renting a place is hard, especially if they think you're going to fail.
Right.
And then the ingredients and the team and the staff, like how was that process?
Long.
Just simply put.
Yeah, really long, way longer than we anticipated. So initially there was no team. The team was my husband and I. So he worked downstairs and I worked upstairs. The kitchen is upstairs. So I was up in the kitchen making donuts. He was downstairs talking to customers and selling the donuts and coffee. And that was literally it for the first almost 3 years, I want to say, 2.5, 3 years. And, you know, and then everything else, you just kind of learn as you go. Like when we were starting out, like, again, I had made friends here. So we first started out, we actually opened the doors to our brick and mortar shop. We opened in July of 2016, but the year before in 2015, I started it as like a pop-up slash like wholesale. So I was selling to coffee shops and, I had made friends with a lot of the other like coffee shop owners. So when it was time for us to open up, at least for things like suppliers, like basic things like where do I, you know, who do I buy flour off of? I was able to go to other friends in the restaurant industry and, you know, they would say, here's where you go, blah, blah, blah. Like these people are good. So, you know, so that was helpful there. We were refused a loan from the bank. So we literally just like big borrowed and stole to open the first.
I love the stealing part of that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we found this like tiny little, like the shop that we have is, it's literally closet space. It had been empty for years because nobody wanted it because they didn't, there was nothing. It was too small for anybody to do anything in. It had been a wholesale clothing shop once upon a time and then had closed. And so it was in like really crappy condition. We had to literally build everything ourselves. You know, so we were there like painting the walls. My husband built, you know, all of the furniture. We had another friend who helped us out with like the display case, but it was literally like an IKEA counter with glass stuck on top of it. You know, it was really very DIY, very no frills. But for us, that was literally the only way we were ever going to open was either we're going to do it and everything's going to be kind of, you know, crappy and except for the donuts, which are obviously delicious. And, and then we just thought as time goes on and hopefully we make money, we'll be able to then put it back into the business and, you know, make the exterior sort of an interior match the quality of the baked goods that we're selling. And we've been able to do that. So that's cool.
Your market, have you found it's a good combination between French and foreigners?
Yep, definitely. We are 50-50. Well, now obviously we're like almost 100% French, seeing as we've been locked down for a year and a half. Only French people for the most part. And like, you know, expats that live here. But no, we have, it's a French majority. I'd say even when people are traveling, it's still 60-40 maybe. Like we do have a lot of English speakers that come to the shop looking for kind of like a taste of home or just, you know, because they really like donuts. And again, for a long time, we were the only place to get them. But we have a lot of French clientele. You know, which is great seeing as we're in France.
I'm always curious because, you know, I think Holy Belly falls into this, is that the indus, like your guys's shops are incredible, and he picked it up from Australia. You have it. I mean, the donut culture in America is huge, so it's a very foreign culture. When I think for a long time France wasn't open to that,
yeah.
And so I think it's changing a bit now. Mm. But when it comes to people who frequent it, I could see it becoming very popular among quote unquote expats,
mm-hmm.
and then foreigners, especially in a city like Paris.
Mm.
But to hear that it's there's a good majority of French people is really incredible.
Yeah, I know. No, I think if we tried to open 10 years earlier, I'm not sure we would have done as well. Like, you have some examples in the early 2000s, there was like one restaurant, Breakfast in America, where you could go and get like filter coffee and pancakes, and they had like bagels with cream cheese. And it was, you know, and every once in a while you'd go, but it was packed full of Americans, obviously, who were homesick, because literally you couldn't get hamburgers. Like, hamburgers weren't around then. Like, it was really like French food, which also was fabulous. Like, I loved living here when it was like that. And it was just super, super French, you know? But I'm not sure that had I decided to go the same direction and be like, I'm going to just open this like super American product where we're, you know, even though they're artisanal donuts, it's still going to be donut. I'm not sure that we would have had, I think we probably would have been popular with other, you know, Anglophones or like English speakers. Again, same type of thing, sort of looking for a taste of home, but maybe, but I'm not sure we would have gotten as much enthusiasm from French people. And again, I'm very grateful that we do. So,
I mean, it's been 5 years. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah. So, no, exactly. So we're still here, thank goodness.
Especially with like everything Paris has gone through.
Yeah.
Because you talk about getting hit after hit after hit,
yeah.
From the attacks in 2015 to all the gilets jaunes, mm-hmm. and then the transportation and now COVID.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it. Like, it's been.
Oh. You're like, yeah. I've been living this, man.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. It has felt at times very relentless. But also, you know, again, everybody's in it together is the thing. Like, every single person who runs a business over here at the moment has been dealing with the same sort of succession of crappy things to happen. And, you know, we're very lucky that as a bakery, you know, once the super strict confinement was lifted, we're able to operate as a takeaway, you know, so at least we're able to be open-ish, you know, at the moment. Like, we're open literally for takeaway only. But it's better than being closed. You know?
Yeah.
So, cool.
Yeah. Still got business, which is incredible.
Yeah. Well, I think now we're actually quite busy at the moment. And I think it's because people are just really looking for a nice way to treat themselves. So, and now again, strict confinement affects us, where when people are like strictly confined, either we're closed, like we're actually closed this week because the kids are like, schools are closed and everything at the moment. So we closed for a week because that, you know, we do see a real dip in, you know, nobody's out basically. And I think everybody who can leave Paris does so. So it's just, it's very, very calm. And we have kids. So I thought, okay, we'll just take a little break. But otherwise, what, like, you know, as far as, you know, a lot of restaurants have been closed. Well, they've been closed for over a year now, and we've at least had periods of opening. And again, when things are normal, not normal, but, you know, when people aren't in confinement, you know, we're quite busy, but I think it's 'cause we're like, you know, again, like a nice little treat. People can come, and it's nice to like buy yourself a cup of coffee and a little donut, you know?
Yeah. And then you can walk away and just eat it.
Yeah. You know,
which is so helpful,
yeah.
in this period.
Exactly. Yeah. So, so it's cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for walking me through your whole journey. It was such a fun discussion, and I'm personally celiac, so I can't eat like anything, cool. But I hear so many good things about.
We get a lot of questions about gluten-free, and I can't do it. I think I need a separate kit. I mean, for like celiacs, especially, mm-hmm. there's no way that I would be able to guarantee gluten-free, but we got a lot of questions about it. So one day, maybe, basically, is hopefully maybe one day when I have like a bigger place and I can
Like, yeah, that's the thing. It's space and it's time and it's a whole new set of flower and products.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting that you get a lot of like questions about gluten free or not.
We do. Yeah. 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 That's, it's something that's come up recently.
Mainly from Anglophone, I'm guessing.
Not at all, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah. Lots of French asking about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So when you do come back, hopefully you'll have more options because I think it is definitely like growing. Yeah.
There's like a few that have, there's a few shops that do it, but
yeah,
tis what it is.
Yeah.
But again, I hear so many good things about Bone Shaker that I'm like, oh my God.
Thanks very much.
But thanks for spending your time talking
to me. Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.